Okay, why don't we move on to our last agenda item, the infamous, tantalizing executive officer's report.
Hey, John.
Wow. See, I try to lower expectations, not jack them up right before I deliver. That's going to be hard to fulfill. Okay, the executive officer's report, which I'm going to do. The first piece we have in the executive officer's report are a couple of tables regarding routine water quality certifications, both applications that were received and certifications that were issued for the period of July 28th through October 23rd. And I'm going to ask if there's any questions on that.
And so the, oh, see, I punched that out.
I'm going to applicant.
I do have one question.
Yeah, Dr. Hunter.
The environmental project, let's see, Chevron Environmental Management Company, which is on page 2, almost halfway down. So they're removing wastewater pipeline segments that traverse a wetland area in Morro Bay. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What is the location of that? And then there'll be some remaining pipeline segments that will be abandoned in place. What is that actually going to look like? just curious.
This is Phil Hammer of our staff, and Phil, I might have just a little bit of information, but I'll let you.
I'm sorry. What was the name of the project?
It's the Chevron Environmental Management Company, a sterile marine terminal ballast pond piping removal.
Okay. I think it's a facility near Toro Creek.
Okay.
Near the beach. My understanding is there's some underground pipelines, and so all the work is dealing with pipelines that go underneath this wetland, and so that the impact is really quite minimal in terms of just trying to leave some portions of the pipelines in place and just abandon them under the wetland. And then areas where it's easy to remove them, they're going to. But I think the vast majority of the work is a temporary impact to the wetlands, and any impacts will be restored.
Right.
So I think it's quite a small impact.
Right. So how long has it been since the wastewater pipeline was in use?
I don't know that. My staff would be working on it more closely than I have been.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm just curious what happens when you abandon wastewater pipeline in the wetlands. Does it go through a process of being decommissioned in any way, that it's flushed and so forth?
Mm-hmm. I believe it does. I think sometimes they fill them, uh-huh. Like with concrete.
Okay.
But if you want more details on it, I can talk to the staff who's working on the project.
Yeah, since they're in the stage of applying for the certification, and there's still more to be done, so maybe we could have a little more detail on that.
Okay.
Although I know the upcoming meetings are going to be jammed, but possibly in the EO report we could just have some.
Sure, we can write up an EO report and give you an update.
That would be that
a little
be
more detail on what the project's about and everything. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Moving on to the joint effort for hydro modification control and low impact development. This discussion was provided by Dominic Rock, and it indicates that on October 31st, staff provided a letter that is attached and the status report for the Central Coast joint effort for hydro modification control and low impact development. And that status report includes a schedule for completing the project. And today's meeting provides an opportunity for feedback on that status, public feedback on that status report. And I briefly asked Dominic if he wanted to offer any contribution about the content of the status report, and he said he's happy to answer any questions if you have any.
I
Thanks, Dominic, and Phil. And Phil.
Any board comments or questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay. Moving on to the budget update. Mr. Briggs has provided an update on the budget status, including travel restrictions and our current balance here with respect to positions. And this update also mentions our efforts to focus on the highest priority work as we have staff leave. Like we spoke about John Mijares today, it causes us to reconsider where we're spending our resources, our people, and make sure that we're expending that time on the most important work, which means moving work around amongst staff. It's a good exercise. Mm-hmm.
John?
And I was going to ask, do you want to add to that?
Just when I wrote the section regarding our vacancy situation, in the meantime, I got another vacancy report, and it looks a little better. So that's good, and so I think we're going to be out of the hole early next year, and that we will no longer be in the situation where we as an individual regional board have a hiring freeze, assuming there isn't one that is, again, put in place statewide. And then I did mention in here that in light of the fact that our administrative staff has been hit so hard this year, and that the last not counting John, but the last three people who have left have all been from the admin unit, starting with Carol Hewitt, the first of the year. And our admin unit was not very large to start with. So we did, I talked to Tom Howard, and we got individual dispensation to borrow a position from the total organization and to try to hire an additional admin person. And we've advertised that. We have applications, and Cindy Jones is going through the process of evaluating those applications and setting up interviews. So we're hopeful that that'll pan out. We'll get some much-needed help in the admin unit.
Okay. Any questions on the budget? Moving on. I wanted to highlight that both Christina Seeley, who spoke earlier, and Roger Briggs, who just spoke, presented to students at Cal Poly recently. Christina spoke to the Society of Environmental Engineers, and Roger spoke with an environmental management class. And, okay, so now moving on to the discussion of agricultural regulatory program implementation update. We have a discussion here of the ag program implementation efforts provided by Angela Schroeder. The first part of the report details.
I'm doing a symbolic.
Okay, sorry. The migration. First part of the report details the September 30th extension. Might sound familiar, of the existing ag order for a period of 1 year. Want to note that the draft ag order is tentatively scheduled for the March board meeting, March 2012 board meeting agenda, and that will be held here in this office. There was some conflicting information up on our web that suggested it might be in Watsonville. That was incorrect. That will be held here.
Sorry to interrupt, John, but it is possible that we'll use a bigger room in San Luis Obispo, but be in San Luis Obispo.
All righty. The ag status report, the ag program status report, also discusses updated monitoring and reporting program. These updates reflect the September 1st 2011 version of the draft ag order, and the primary changes are listed in the bulleted section on page 7 of the EO report, and I'll note a couple of those that appear to include several reductions in the monitoring or in reporting requirements associated with the monitoring and reporting program. There's also a link to more extension and monitoring related information at the bottom of page 7. Okay, and now shifting to you want to
John
question?
could you also just we had the item that was the enforcement report that mentioned the progress with
I was gonna,
those that have failed to enroll.
I was going to come to that in just about a paragraph of verbiage. And if I don't, hold me to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's plenty here.
Yeah, there's pages, some good content in there. Yeah, yeah. So shifting to the section called High Priority Groundwater Cases, Ag staff are currently working on 4 cases where drinking water wells are impacted by unsafe levels of nitrate. These wells are all in areas known to have severe groundwater nitrate problems due to fertilizer application. And these 4 wells are located in Morro Bay, San Gerardo, San Lucas, and Gilroy, referred to as an Anchor Point School. I would call the board's attention to the discussion of the Morro Bay example on page 8 in the first big paragraph of page 8 with referring to the Morro Bay example, which is the farthest along of the cases, noting that the grower achieved nearly a 50% reduction in total nitrogen applied after implementing nutrient budgeting and management practices. That's pretty substantial. And staff is following up similarly on the other 3 cases that I mentioned.
And how did has that resulted in an improvement in water quality?
I don't know the answer to that.
Well, one answer is the groundwater moves very slowly. So a basin that reacts in a couple of years would be really fast.
Mm-hmm. That's in that area that has a very shallow groundwater basin?
Right. Yeah. So that is a basin that would react more quickly, but still, travel times of feet per year are not unusual. So it's not something where you're going to see an instantaneous reaction by any means.
Okay.
Also, it's noted here that staff is working with the Department of Public Health, and I would really be interested in hearing what that looks like. How are you coordinating the resources of the 2 agencies?
I can speak a little bit to that, but I'll let Angela in this specific case. I'll let Angela take the lead, and then we have more general communication with DPH too.
Angela Schroeder.
Yeah.
Angela Schroeder, senior engineering geologist. How's that? Talk closer?
No.
Speak into the mic.
You want to use it? Try it again.
Why don't you could stand up there, Angela.
On now? No?
No.
Want to try the podium?
Yeah. The old fashioned way.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
So Angela Schroeder, senior engineering geologist. I manage the agricultural regulatory program. In this specific case, and actually in general, we have staff assigned to each watershed, the Pajaro, Salinas, and Santa Maria. And those staff proactively work with both the local Department of Public Health at the county level, as well as interfacing with staff at the State Department of Public Health who are assigned to that region. So in general, we do 2 things. We look at the current CDPH data for public supply wells. We confirm their understanding about that, any other data that they might have. And we also specifically focus on any information they might have about small community water systems or domestic wells in the area for which they might not have real data, but they might have some anecdotal evidence or information, and we coordinate with them at that level. And then we also keep them up to date on the cases, what we're doing.
By cases you're talking about, the specific actions we are taking for addressing these the groundwater cases.
Right, just sort of the activities that we're doing. You know, we've inquired with these growers, or we're assessing compliance with these aspects of the order, okay. Just so that they're up to date on what we're doing.
And how does that process then lead to the results that we're looking for, which is to start to narrow in on non-compliance, start to open up new, encourage new practices that are going in the right direction, et cetera. Does DPH have tools at their discretion to as incentives to move in that direction?
Outside of their authority to require monitoring and the provision of safe drinking water, they do not have any other authority.
Okay. But they can require monitoring of these small community well systems.
On the small community well
and
systems.
If they're drinking water wells.
Yes.
Yeah. And we really don't have that authority.
We can also require monitoring of those wells if we feel that they are potentially impacted by a discharge.
Okay. All right. Is it groundwater monitoring? Is it drinking supply monitoring?
It's in general the receiving water or groundwater monitoring, but in many cases it's drinking water.
Okay. And DPH monitors the actual water supply.
Right. The water that gets served to the community.
Okay. Good. All right. Thank you.
So DPH will also look at source wells contributing to a water system,
okay.
And require, as Angela indicated, require monitoring on that well and potentially mm-hmm. require blending plans, et cetera, if mm-hmm. as nitrate approaches the drinking water limit.
Okay.
So they'll put a plan in place.
Data management.
Continuing on, yeah. Moving on to the next section of the Ag Program Status Report regarding the Electronic Notice of Intent, or often referred to as the ENOI, for enrollment under the Ag Order. This section provides a status update as requested by the Board at the September meeting. As of November 3rd, and I'm taking this information out of the table on page 8 and 9. As of November 3rd, more than 87% of the total irrigated acreage in the region is now in the new GeoTracker database. Additionally, nearly 20,000 new acres have been enrolled, representing 118 farming operations. And this represents the excellent combined efforts of ag staff and farmers to update all that information.
Okay. So in terms of comparing the differences in acreage between ENOI and the water quality
previous
billing information, water quality program billing, cooperative water quality program, is there numbers? Are there numbers for that yet?
I'm not. Let me see if I understand you correctly. So what we've done since the September meeting, we've done a number of data quality evaluation, mm-hmm. One of which was to compare the previous enrollment data to what was in submitted electronically via the ENOI. And we've done a lot of work to do that, and at this time we feel very confident that the data set is fairly high quality and complete. And but there wasn't any growers lost. So the growers that were represented in the hard copy and the previous enrollment database are now also included with those who have submitted the ENOI. However, there are still growers who have not submitted that data electronically. We were able to combine the data from the previous information, but there's still about 200 growers who have not submitted the ENOI data. What we've actually done, so if you recall, this was the 800. So originally there was 800 operations that hadn't submitted. We actually went through and called many of those growers individually to try and decrease that number. As a result of that effort, we got lots of notices of termination from growers who are no longer in business, which cleared out a bunch of, I would just call it poor data at this point. And so we're working to follow up with those who are remaining. However, that remaining acreage is now around 20,000 acres, which is may in fact be valid. We need to find those growers and work with them to update.
Okay. Turning our attention to Table 2 on page 9, this table lists recent ENOI and data management improvements. And many of these were suggestions from a couple of previous board meetings. And I tabbed a couple improvements of note. Growers can now review and change their data online, and making updates much easier. And also, staff issued, in the middle of page 9, staff issued 800 notices of violation to submit ENOI information, and approximately 72% came into compliance in response to that. Okay. Staff also issued approximately 1,500 letters to growers already covered under the electronic notice of intent, requiring the growers to update their information. As of October 18th, and it's probably improved since then, I guess, 82% had updated their information using GeoTracker. Staff has received positive feedback from a number of entities, including the farm bureaus, commodity groups, and others. And staff has translated the electronic notice of intent documents into Spanish and Chinese, and has held a number of assistant workshops with still more scheduled. Mm-hmm. Lastly, I note that staff met with Kirk Schmidt, the executive director of Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, Inc., on several occasions since the last board meeting in September. Staff provided him with preliminary enrollment data on October 20th and delivered final enrollment data to him today. And these were dates that were requested by Mr. Schmidt, and staff met those dates. And more information is provided at the bottom of page 12 regarding electronic notice of intent. And if there's any more questions.
Well, we have two speakers. Okay. Mr. Schmidt, so tell us where we are at from your perspective. Do you have the information you need to do your billing?
This is a couple of issues. My name is Kirk Schmidt. I'm the executive director of Central Coast Water Quality Preservation, or mostly Preservation, Inc. We do the water quality monitoring so farmers can comply with the ag waiver at 50 sites throughout the Central Coast, and have been doing this since 2005 monthly, and then we do various other sampling as well throughout the year. This is entirely funded presently by billing the farmers for participation in this process. Last year, at the beginning of last year, it became apparent that the number of growers enrolled in the new ENOI database had declined by over 30% from the prior database, and the remaining growers were concerned if 30% of the growers were off the hook, they didn't want to participate either. It became a crisis not only for the administration of the ag waiver and as a regulatory process, but our ability to assess the participating growers when we send bills out annually in December. Starting in May of last year, for each of your board meetings until September, we had an ongoing discussion about the quality of the database. I would like to say that as a result of those discussions, and I would like to thank your board for making it clear to everyone concerned how important it was to have a reliable database. The number of growers participating in the, or that are not participating, the number of growers that are captured in the database now is close to where it was 2 years ago of the ENOI database at 377,000, possibly more, and that's a number as of October 21st. I'm not quite sure about the viability of the old enrollees that were in the old database and were moved over to the new database, because I just got the database. I haven't had an opportunity to look at it. But because we were able to get a preliminary database summary on October 21st, the Ag Committee, which is a group of farmers that determine the assessment schedule for growers in the Central Coast, believed that there were sufficient growers participating and that we were back to the same level we had been in the past. And they developed a assessment schedule based on 375,000 acres participating in the program. And we, at that point, knew how many acres and how many tailwater acres. We were able to come up with an assessment schedule, which we provided staff with. And our assessment, our bills that go out in December, this month, will reflect that. The most important thing is the staff has really made an incredible effort to not just have a database, but manage a database. So instead of knowing that it was in the computer, they've done a tremendous job to validate the quality of the data, to make sure that the people who are enrolled are not enrolled twice, to make sure that people can't enroll with, you know, mistakenly input the wrong AW number. Now farmers can have their own password and identification number so that they can call, so they can change their information virtually at any time. I'm not quite sure how that will work out, but that's a tremendous improvement because it allows the farmers to make sure that their data is correct to look at it, and so that gives much more credibility to individual operations. They've gone to such lengths as that at one point there was 22,000 acres that had enrolled as for due individual monitoring. Staff called every one of those growers, and with the exception of some small growers, everyone has conceded that they checked the wrong box, and that it was, well, it costs about a fourth. Just the state fees alone are four times more than what Preservation Inc. charged to participate in the cooperative monitoring program. So every grower, when this was explained to him, was appreciative that this was explained to him and is now in the cooperative monitoring program. Although there's still 1,900 acres that's individual monitoring, and I'm sure that some of that will be worked out before we send our bills out on the 20th of this month.
When did they check the boxes off? In 2005? Or is this with the recent?
This was with the ENOI.
Okay.
In 2005, we only had 20 growers.
Okay.
That there was never any pursuit of during that period of time that was doing individual monitoring.
Okay.
But now there's been a lot more hands-on approach. Angela and Elaine Saul are the primary people with this and need to be complimented, although I have to concede that they've drafted many other staff members to help work through this process because it was such a large process. We originally had a deadline of the end of October. Once we got the preliminary data, I explained that we really don't need it till December 1st. The reason we asked for an October deadline was because if there wasn't an increase in enrollment, literally Preservation Inc. would go out of business, and we needed time to wrap up our affairs. Since we've recaptured the acreage, we are not going out of business. And this raises a second issue that I'd like to thank Mr. Briggs for. And that is by adopting or authorizing a new MRP that was consistent with the MRP that was discussed in the draft ag waiver. It allows us to start monitoring in 2012 using that MRP. We've completed the sampling and analysis plan that's been sent into staff, it's been reviewed by staff. We're going to start doing monitoring in compliance with the new MRP in January, and it was necessary for that to be adopted in September so that we could do the administrative work to get the matching paperwork in so that there'd be continuity there, and we want to have a change halfway through the year. So those two things have worked out very well for us, and we will be undertaking our first monitoring in the new year about the 20th of January. Now, of course, we have another monitoring cycle this month, which should be the first rainstorm event, but the way we're going, we may not. We'll still be monitoring. We might not be a rainstorm event. So, in general, everything is much improved, and I really thank the staff's diligent work on this because they've now become totally invested in maintaining a commercially adequate database.
Any comments on any areas that still need improvement?
Well, I only received the database and is sitting on that chair.
Okay.
And until I review it further, I won't have any comments. But we now have, I think, Sarah Green in my office and myself have been working with your staff. And I think the problems in the past of saying that the interns were self-auditing when they put in the data are in the past. And we now have people who are diligently looking at the data that's coming in from the growers and are spending time talking to the growers. There have been workshops as late as the 18th of last month up in Gilroy for Chinese speakers. So there's a tremendous attempt to actually engage the growers themselves.
Good. Glad to
Thank
hear
you.
That. Any questions for Mr. Schmidt from any board members? Okay.
Just one.
Dr. Hunter.
Okay. I'm curious if I'm going to flip back to the enforcement report and
yes.
the update on the going after the violators. And I see that 27 of 183 responded to bring themselves into compliance. I was curious, does that mean that they enrolled plus paying penalties? And then is that a good signal to the greater community of growers that there are consequences and that people are going to have to make a decision about where they're going to, what their strategy is going to be to keep that pool, you know, dwindling to fewer and fewer non-compliant growers?
I'm not quite sure how to predict the future on that. I believe that the growers that I deal with, the people who are on the Ag Committee, people who are on my board, believe there's much more compliance with enrollment, and as a result, we're going to be able to send out our participation fee statements in a timely fashion to a very large group of growers, many that we haven't had in the past. Beyond that, I really think the growers are waiting for they're waiting to see how the ag waiver is developed and what's adopted, which we're presuming is going to be happening in the first part of next year.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Taylor Silva.
Good afternoon, Chairman Young and the board. Thank you for the opportunity to follow the staff report and provide an update of agriculture's efforts regarding improving water quality. My name is Abby Taylor Silva. I'm here today representing the Grower Shipper Association of Central California and also Farmers for Water Quality, which is a group of grower and shipper organizations working together to find water quality solutions. We are very grateful to all of the continuing and new board members for volunteering their time and perspective to this important issue. The agricultural community looks forward to working with you all. The growers in Region 3 want to develop a stronger working relationship with the board so that we can create a more open and transparent process focused on finding solutions. The agricultural community has been and continues to be an active participant in any renewal of any ag discharge process. All of our efforts are focused on finding a way to improve water quality and continue farming on the Central Coast. Over the past few months, we've been outreaching to environmental and conservation groups, university scientists, and other stakeholders to seek new ideas and build consensus. One of the activities that we've identified is to develop regional pilots to test and demonstrate that a third-party-based program can be implemented in the three watersheds in our region. To assist in the implementation of a third-party-based program, we've enlisted the help of Dr. Marcos Huertos of CSUMB. His expertise in watershed management and understanding of the unique water quality challenges on the Central Coast are valuable as we work toward illustrating that a third-party-based program can be very effective. An incredible amount of effort has gone into this process by Dr. Los Huertos and growers throughout the region who are trying to find a solution in a very adaptive process. Their concentrated work on this project over the past few months has shown a great deal of good faith effort by the region's growing community. We understand that the State Water Board is also looking to develop a team concept for pilot programs. Similarly, over the coming months, Central Coast Agriculture intends to continue working with the public and private partners on a local, state, and national level to find opportunities to begin making improvements to water quality through a third-party-based pilot program. We look forward to updating you on these projects at coming meetings. Finally, we also encourage the board to take this opportunity of an extended waiver period to hold a couple of public workshops and a full rehearing on the Ag Waiver Program. The agricultural community believes there are important ideas and solutions still to be discussed and would welcome the opportunity to do so with you. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I mean, staff is always has their door open to receiving new comments and things of that nature.
Okay.
I don't think we're going to have any more public workshops.
Okay.
But, I mean, you've been participating in this for years, right?
Two years.
Okay, so I mean, it looks like March is going to be when this item is going to come before us for some kind of a decision.
Okay, well, we'll be very happy to update you about the Los Huertos project and any pilot programs that we're working on at that time.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, I would like to add that Mark Los Huertos in particular is, I think, the perfect scientist to lead that effort. He's based at Cal State Monterey Bay at the Watershed Institute and part of the Environmental Studies Program there, but he's been working very closely with the ag community and I think has achieved a level of trust as well as veracity of his work, and so I'm very heartened to hear that he's taken a major role in pushing forward with identifying best practices and based on the three different watersheds and the different regimes. That will require a very unique complex of best practices, but that should inspire confidence because he has done a tremendous amount of work in this region.
And his work is very well respected by the agricultural community. We're very happy to be working with him as well.
That's very good news.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Okay.
Last speaker, Steve Shemek.
Realizing that we had the opportunity to speak once again on the Ag Waiver, I figured I'd take the shot. Steve Shemek with Monterey Coast Keeper and the Otter Project. First of all, I think that we've all been involved in this process for a very long time, as you pointed out, Chair Young. I mean, there were hearings, there's been processes, there's been sub-processes. It's been a convoluted path to get here. So we look forward to March. We look forward to a decision in March, hopefully, and in moving ahead. As far as the third party, I'd like to mention that we don't really even know what that looks like. And so it's very difficult for, the rest of the public to participate in commenting on that. The last comment that we heard was that it looked like the third party system was probably a not legal, really, framework, and that especially if it put people between the data and the regional board. And so the last look that we've all had at this third-party scheme was the word that it may not be legal. And we haven't seen anything since then. So we don't know what it looks like. So standing up here and trying to sell something that no one else knows what it looks like is kind of difficult for the rest of the public. As far as outreach efforts, I know that the growers have not contacted me, and I don't know of any other environmental organizations in the Monterey area, at least that I work with, that have been contacted by the growers. So outreach to the environmental community, I haven't seen it. And then finally, transparency. You know, I point out once again, as I pointed out on several occasions, that Water Quality Preservation, Inc. is a organization run by farmers and solely managed by farmers. We've commented before that we felt that other stakeholders should ultimately be allowed onto that board. I have not seen that happen, and I'm not sure that that's even in the plans. I'd also note that there have been a recent set of workshops for growers, and frankly, I appreciate those workshops. They've been going rolling through statewide, but they were publicly noticed, and I actually asked to go to one. I RSVP'd and was asked to not attend. So again, transparency. I'm not sure what it is when it comes to this process. I think you guys have been great in holding the line of having public meetings, but then when it comes to developing other alternatives and other stakeholder groups, you know, I have to admit the environmental folks have not been inviting the growers to our meetings, and the growers have not been inviting us to theirs. You know, so thank you for having a transparent and inclusive process. You guys are the ones that are holding the line on that. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That concludes our public comment on this item. And no more speaker cards, no more agenda items. The meeting is adjourned, and we will reconvene in February. Thank you all very much.
In Salinas.
In Salinas.